Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And, you know, we think about things here. We talk about things, and we talk about things that are of meaning. Recently, I had a nice experience with a group of people who I haven't seen for years, and they were just so kind, and I noticed their kindness. And I noticed that I surround myself with many people who are kind. Yet, I'm standing at a supermarket line, and there were a few people behind me. And then there's a person who's in front of me, and she's about to bag her groceries. She took a long time. She drops a few things, really besides herself. You know, you could tell something was wrong. People in the line yell, you know, hurry up, somebody says, hurry up. And then somebody else in back of that says, would you please hurry, in an angry voice. She dropped the bag, splattered stuff all over the floor, and the line got very annoyed. She turned around, and in tears, she explained she had multiple sclerosis and was trying the best she can. She says, it's hard for me to keep things together. I'm sorry. Tears in her eyes. Now, was this necessary? I mean, was that it? Was that the lesson that we needed for people standing online getting impatient? Do you have to have somebody there who is showing you how much damage you do? Somebody who's waiting on a table, a wait person, gets an order wrong. The patron yells at her, this is not what I ordered. She cries. Is that necessary? Your wife forgets to bring you a napkin with your meal. You get annoyed. Is that necessary? Most of us, each day, do something or say something, even inadvertently, that hurts somebody. It might be just absence. It might be something you do by not saying something. We want to check into that today. We want to look at what it is that hurts people, what part of it you're playing, what part of it is just part of the game. Like, it could be passive. You could do passive hurting. Passive hurting is like gossiping about someone. And gossiping about someone is, in effect, hurting that person because you're talking about them, you're talking bad about them, and while you're doing it, you get a feeling that there's a little bit of a kind of a snickeriness going on. Like, it's like you're nasty while you do it. Nobody gossips with love. You know, you never watch people having this loving feeling. Oh, let me tell you about her and what's wrong with her. Usually there's gossip is usually accompanied by some kind of negativity. So on some level, we know we are being mean, either directly or indirectly. So we have to ask the question, why do we do this? Why do we do it? You know, what is it that we need that brings us to this? That's what we're here to talk about today, my friends. Being mean, the meaning of being mean, and being mean to people you love. Let's talk about it. Maybe they're too sensitive, you know. You choose them. They need stuff, and maybe you resent filling their need. What is it about loving someone that makes them the one you hurt the most? You know that expression, we always hurt the one we love? Or is that just one way of looking at it? Maybe it's not you hurting them. But maybe them feeling hurt by you. What did I say? What did I say? Now, that's a confusion, isn't it? Think about that. You live alone, nobody gets hurt by you. Beauty of living alone. Today, I didn't hurt anybody because I'm living alone. You know, a great thing. You can live by yourself easy. You get upset, no one to get annoyed at. You get upset, it lasts for a little while. You get over it. You don't wind up kicking anybody, doing anything to anybody. You maybe do a nasty phone call or kick something, but the beauty of being alone, you don't hurt anybody. Maybe you live with a dog or a cat. It's hard to be too rough on your pet. You know what I mean? You can't. A boyfriend, a girlfriend, a husband, a wife, it's easy to take it out on them. Speaking of pets, Today, I have a bunch of dog quotes in honor of man's best friend for someone who is listening who's a dog fancier. Here we go. Let's start with this one because it fits by, it's by John Steinbeck. John Steinbeck once said, "I've seen that look in the dog's eye, a quick, vanishing look of amazed contempt. And I'm convinced that dogs think humans are nuts." Amazed contempt. This kind of look of a dog's in the dog's face. They just look at you and they say, "What is that? What is that thing going on there?" You know, contempt is a frequent response to people who hurt you. Can you picture contempt? Can you try to feel it? What contempt is like right now? Maybe a contemptuous face. What's it like? You know, brow tight, lips sealed, eyes squinting. You know contempt? Everybody out there knows it at some point. You just, you know, maybe you try to please people, and you try so hard to please people, and they're just ungrateful, or people are negative towards you. And you get this feeling of, you know, contemptuous contempt. That's what people who get hurt by other people frequently feel towards the people who hurt them. And you know what contempt leads to? Contempt leads to one of two things, either depression or revenge, or both. So we have to talk about that today. Yes, you hurt someone. They are powerless to deal with you. They feel contempt. They get revenge, and that revenge could simply be that the hurt person celebrates any misfortune you ever have. So that's what happens eventually. You know, you get somebody that gets contemptuous of you. They never celebrate your good fortunes, but boy, they're happy when something goes wrong with you, quietly happy. You know, good for you. Maybe you were nasty towards a storekeeper. Maybe you were nasty towards an insurance representative on the phone who was calling you, you know, to sell you some insurance. Imagine that you treat people disrespectfully, respectfully, insensitively, and on some level, because you have to be polite, they resent you. They feel contempt. And if you treat them badly enough, some part of them will feel glee when the process happens where you lose out. Part of them is happy that you don't get your claim. I've seen it a lot. I was on a highway once where traffic was jammed and some guy decided to drive on the shoulder to get ahead of everybody else, but ran an obstacle and he broke his car. See, he's kind of skipping ahead of everybody else and he hit an obstacle and he broke his car. People were delighted. Everybody was happy. Everybody was kind of there. There you go. That's what you get. So today I want to dig in the issue of why are we mean to other people. We'll take your calls, too, and why people are mean to us. And by mean, I don't only mean sadistic, conscious hurting out of anger. I mean insensitive, short-tempered. I mean not caring about the effect of what you do. I mean being a creep to someone, or in common parlance, dissing somebody. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. On the other side of the non-mean people, I mean, you could just think of, I could think of some of the people who work with Dr. Bully, you know, who some of our new audience who's here today, listening with us here probably for the first time, Elaine, and Christian, and Allison, and Sue Ann, and, you know, a whole new listening group. Listening and finding out what WBAI is. They're really lovely people. Talk about the opposite of meanness. So here's one type of person who tends to be meaner than everyone else. The one who gets annoyed at waiters and cab drivers, the type A personality, the stressed personality, they tend to do the most damage. Speaking of cab drivers, hey, we have a lot of cab drivers out there, a lot of people who drive cabs and listen to BAI. And I know if you're driving, you can't stop now and call in right this minute. But nowhere in life is there a greater incidence of random meanness spillover. Get this, RMS, random meanness spillover, which we'll talk about them with cab drivers. People are frequently disgusted with cab drivers. Why? Because most people who get into cabs are somewhat of a hurry. They have to get somewhere, and they have been mostly frustrated by trying to find a cab, especially at holiday season. The passengers are carrying a load, not only their packages, but their emotional load, into that cab. They get in a cab, and here's this incredible opportunity. You have someone there, for once, who you think is at your command. So you boss them. You don't ask them to take you somewhere. You tell them to take you somewhere. And if something goes wrong, if the traffic is too thick, if the driver selected the wrong route, boom, annoyance, criticism, negativity. And, you know, the driver has to learn how to deal with it. They have to swallow that junk that people put out with them. It's a really funny thing. There's a new revenge. The new revenge are direction finders. Direction finders in a lot of cars and cabs, which are kind of interesting. Now you say where you want to go. Somebody who doesn't even speak English just puts it in front on their, direction finder. And they put it up there, and then they just follow the thing direct. They just point to it. And I've had people who speak no English at all. And so you could just blame the direction finder. Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. So what about hurt? How about you get in a cab and the driver is mean-sounding? Wonder what got him to be that way? A cab driver is like a storekeeper. You have to serve to survive. You know, as a storekeeper, you grow immune to all the passing pain and disregard and things you get. I had a friend who made great pastries. She made wonderful pastries. She was like a great cook. And mostly her hobby was making cookies. And then one day she went to a restaurant where she said, you know, you should try my cookies. And the guy tried them and he said, wow, I'd love to get these for my restaurant. So she would bring them to him. And then she would bring him a box of these cookies and he would pay her for them. And she was real proud her cookies were being sold by this restaurant. Well, after a couple of times of her going there, whenever she went in with her box of cookies, they would treat her like she was a purveyor, like she was a salesperson. So once she remembers, and this is a woman who was used to being treated nicely because mostly she was a buyer, they told her, stand in the corner until we get around to you. Wait over there till we get to you. And most people who are salespeople have to do this. If you have a product you want to sell, you sometimes got to deal with people's meanness. Now, our society has changed. Our world has changed. I don't know if you've noticed it, but in almost every corporation now, the complaint departments have people who are skilled at dealing with meanness. They don't feel a thing you do. You call an insurance company and you scream at them because they don't want to reimburse you. They're with you 100%. They're right there. Oh, I understand completely. Yes, I see. I'm going to take your part in it. They're like bill collectors, you know. They're like, you know, there are people who are bill collectors, and when they call you, they try to get information from you, but they're so empathetic. They are so understanding, and they're just primarily trying to get information. Well, there's a new crew of people out there. There's a new profession, and it's called complaint people. And these people are immune to meanness. There is nothing you could do. They have it all. I just can't imagine what the training course is like. What a really curious thing. What do? You go into a room and people throw tomatoes at you or something? How do you train for this? But they train. I mean, you call the telephone company and complain. Call your insurance company and complain and watch what happens. They no longer get rid of you. They no longer hang up on you. They listen to you 100%. Call the airlines. You never get anything you're looking for. They don't bend at all. They are just totally sympathetic. That's the way people have learned to handle mean people. Now, we're also talking with you about those of you who feel like you are the object of someone's meanness. Funny thing, people who complain about other people's meanness rarely see themselves as being mean. People who complain you're being mean, they don't see themselves as being mean. But if we describe meanness as insensitivity to the other person, and if we describe meanness as not being necessarily conscious, then in effect, whenever someone feels hurt by someone they love, by definition, you're insensitive to them. Does that make sense? Therefore, by definition, any time someone feels hurt, someone else was mean, because there was an insensitivity there. It gets tricky. Let's use the example of you and your parents. Here's one of the greatest sources of love and hate. But before we tackle this very complicated relationship, let's go on for a dog quote, because I promised somebody to honor the dog today. Here we go. Here's another quote by Oswald Perry. Oswald Perry said, "To err is human, to forgive canine." Isn't that cute? I like that. And the next is my personal favorite by of all people, Ann Landers. I can never imagine myself quoting Ann Landers, but she said, once she said, "Don't accept your dog's admiration as conclusive evidence that you are wonderful." Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. I think you'd like to pass that on to some of the people I know in the arts when they become successful. I surround themselves with their admirers, and they begin to believe that they are wonderful based on the admiration. Hey, you know, we may be, since we're on this subject, we probably could use to take some calls, too, today. I would love to take some calls. We've got a lot more to talk about. But our telephone number here is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. We will be taking your calls today. We've got one of these weeks where we're not raising money. Tomorrow, Dr. Bernie Starr and I are going to look at one of the deepest, most recent studies, which had to do with the prison system. And in the prison system, they did a mock prison, and they gave some college students the right to be prisoners over other students. And they wound up with a conclusion. I think it might have been Harvard. They wound up with a conclusion that people are basically sadistic when given the opportunity to be. We're going to challenge that. That'll be tomorrow, Wednesday. Let's get back to the issue of meanness and being hurt. One of the claims by people who feel hurt by other people is that no matter what it is, you can always avoid hurting someone by taking the time to be considerate, even if you're going to deny them something they want. Do you think about that? It's a matter of time. If somebody gets hurt by you and you just give them an extra minute... You know, that's what I like so much about Elaine and Allison and Christina. You know, the way that they deal with people, they give them that extra time, a little extra time. The people here at my office, they give that little extra time. There's a way to give people time that kind of gets you past hurting them, you know. I mean, if they're going to have a hurt reaction, sometimes you just need to pay attention to them. So, for example, your mate interrupts you while you're doing something really important. Something critical to your existence, like watching Monday Night Football, you know, or surfing the internet. And your mate wants to talk to you about something. So they dance right into your space and they start talking to you and you get dismissive. And tell them, in effect, to leave you alone and do it in a short, curt way. Have you done that? Have you done that with your children? Have you done that with your mates? Have you done it? Can't be bothered. Now you answer the phone in an exasperated way. I can't talk now. Now, you know, if you look a few moments and stopped whatever you were doing, having made a previous contact, that you would always give each other priority. You would have done that normally. Yet, when we get short-tempered, we do that dismissive thing. There are times that we are not sensitive to people, and we don't give them the time. But here's what it's boiling down to, my friends. It's boiling down to the fact that very often all it requires is an extra minute. That you could spare an extra minute for a lot of people, and the 1 minute may make all the difference between somebody's hurt and somebody's feeling important, because maybe what hurt means is that I'm not important. Maybe hurt just means I don't feel important, and I want to feel important to you in some way. Let's talk about you. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Our first call of the day usually takes a little bit of queuing up. I'll continue until we get that call.
Hello.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Good.
Yes, regarding this question, it's a great question. Based on my own emotions, I always feel, I think it's a defense mechanism based on how I act out and respond to what the person has placed and put in motion when I'm feeling hurt. The first thing I do normally is just feel discomforted. So, of course, I do just the opposite and react based on the stimuli that I feel.
Well, could you give me an example of that?
Okay. I have a roommate, And all of a sudden, he just popped up and told me, I'm moving out. And I said, wow, this cat's been living with me for 6 years, and he's done, out of the wild blue, he's just decided that he's just going to go move. So my first reaction was to ask him, well, you know, do you plan on paying for the furniture that you have damaged? And I didn't have to say that. I didn't have to say anything. I could have just stepped away and just let the day come till he decided that he was going to move, and then asked him then. But out of a defense mechanism on my part, I had to feel, I was overwhelmed about the fact of not being secure or insecure about what I needed to do to find space, find somebody else to fill the space.
Yeah, and did you like him, by the way?
Oh, yeah. He has his moments, yes.
But here's somebody who is in your life. Here's somebody who is like,
yeah,
he's part of your tribe. You know what I mean? And he's there, and he suddenly says, I'm going out, I'm leaving the tribe. People get angry.
Of course, right. And so, you know, so now you said that, take that minute. You know, sometimes you don't know how to really reach within your life to try to find that minute.
Yeah.
So what kind of practice would you teach another individual? How? What would you teach me to say, well, okay, Negron, listen, find that moment or find that space or look or focus on something that you can focus on this one and thing that had happened.
Well, I'll tell you, Negron, here's what basically happens. As you get older, you get a little more reaction time in the neurons. You're lucky it happens. So in other words, whereas when you're very young, you have very fast reactions. You know, somebody throws something at you, you immediately raise your head. Or if you hear lightning, you turn around immediately. As you get older, there's a little time in between. There's like a split second difference in your timing, and you don't react as fast. It's the reaction time. So it's part of aging is you get a little smarter because you get a little slower. Now, if you wanted to put it in there, if you were somebody like you and you wanted to say to yourself, you know, I'd rather build this in now, you would find that as soon as you're about to react, you shut your mouth. But then comes this other thing. You can always apologize.
Mm.
And now this is the big one. The big one is once you do it, you can turn around and you can say, you know, I'm sorry.
Right.
I didn't mean to go there.
Right.
And that begins the undoing.
Right.
You know, you're a brave man. I love your questions. I love the fact that you...
No. Well, you're a cool cat. You're on the money. And the only way for me to grow and develop is by listening to cats like you and try to use what you teach me to grow, you know?
Dogs like me, not cats like me. They were doing dogs. Thanks for calling in, Negron.
All right, thank you.
Here's another dog quote, this one by Rick Horowitz, who said, you may have a dog that won't sit up, won't roll over, or even cook breakfast. Not because he's too stupid to learn, but because he's too smart to bother. Armand DeMille here with you. Hey, so if you're on the phone talking to your daughter or son long distance and your mate wants your attention, you give them priority. You might be able to make that agreement with each other. You might say, hold on a minute. You know, you never really want to put your finger up and tell somebody, don't bother me now. It's just trying to take that extra 10 seconds to give them that pause. You mothers out there, I know how hard it is with your kids. I don't know how you do it. I don't know what you do. You know, how do you put that pause in with your children? Do you say, not now? Do you say, I'll be with you in a minute? What do you do? Well, I'm going to ask. I got a mother here in the studio. Stephanie, help me out. Hang on a second. Here's a mother. Help me out. What do you do with your kids? I see they come to you with demands all the time. What do you do? What's your method? What do you do? If they're saying to you, Mommy, 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 what do you do?
Many times I actually have to stop myself from doing that impulsive thing of what you just described.
What thing?
Stop. Don't interrupt me.
Yeah, you have to stop
yourself.
I do.
I say just, I often will tell them, I'm going to go make a phone call now, so just give me a few minutes. I will do that.
Beforehand.
Six out of 10 times, let's say.
Yeah, okay. And then
I will say to them, just don't interrupt me right now. I have to go take a call from a client. So I try to actually do something preventatively.
Okay, now what say they come in and they barge in on you? And now they barge in and you're on the phone. What do you do?
They're kind of trained. They realize I'm not going to say anything, especially if I'm talking to a client. I won't even say, don't talk to me, to my child. I won't. They'll just see I'm on the phone and they walk out.
You've got them conditioned?
It's a conditioning. It
to
really
walk
is.
Out. But I guess you must have punished them often enough for interrupting you. You must have hit them with the electric prod or something.
Oh, yes, right.
Well, here's the other side of it, Steph. You know what you do? The rest of the time, you give them a lot of reward. The rest of the time, you're there for them. You're one of the most attentive parents I ever met. So it's not like you lack in attention. It's not like they can't get your attention, period. It's not like they're desperate for it. You're going to give it to them, right? The other thing I find about parents, and maybe you'll help me with this too, is if you could tell them, not now, but in 5 minutes, I think that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about meanness and how people are mean. That's Stephanie Donber, my assistant here. It's a question about people who are hurt. Now, are there certain people who are more hurt than other people? That's a real question. So are there certain people who, you know, you got to kind of, let's ask you, what hurts you? Start with your mood. You know, there are times that you're going to feel more hurt than at other times, according to your mood. There'll be some days when nobody can hurt you. And there are going to be other days when you're very easily hurt. Did you ever notice that? It could be your mood. Last night I noticed the full moon was out. And I saw this full moon, and I heard from some people who were feeling very bad. And I said, you know, for all we know, that full moon may be contributing to how sensitive this person is to being hurt right now. It's very possible. We know hormones. We know chemistry. We know all this stuff that could work against you, tension that you could have. So there are times that your mood is a very good determinant. And here's one of the things I suggest. I suggest that if you feel yourself being hurt, ask yourself the question, what was my mood before this happened? And very often you'll find that you were in a bad mood before it happened. When you're in a good mood, you know, it's harder to be hurt by things. Therefore, level of hurt has to do with your individual sensitivity based on the condition you have going in. Now, depressed people feel hurt much more easily than most people. If you have sad people, and they're sad, they're like a raw nerve, it's practically anything will hurt them. And that becomes a difficulty. So, you know, it's not, are you hurting them? Or is it their depression that's leaving them like a raw nerve that's making them hurt so much? That's a question. That's a question to ask. So if you feel responsible for somebody who's depressed, enormous hurt, you're taking on a big burden because, you know, if they're depressed, it's anything is going to hurt them. You know, some people spend their entire life trying to make somebody else happy. And that's a rough thing, my friends. Trying to make somebody happy, tough thing. You got somebody who's basically not happy. Wow, dedicating your life to making them happy, very, very tough thing. Look, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, some unusual music where you're going to have to guess the language, because I'm playing you music from a faraway place. And then we'll take your calls at 212-209-2900. But right now, right this minute, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Escape, I'm not
Now, that music, my friends, did you recognize the language? Anything it was Portuguese? No, it was from Iceland. We were talking in this Icelandic, and it was by an album called Truno, T-R-U-N-O. I highly recommend it. Beautiful thing by Thomas Enarsson, E-I-N-A-R-S-S-O-N. Kind of a cute thing, huh, to discover the stuff that gets thrown at me. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. What hurts you? What are you most sensitive about? You know what I mean? If somebody says, you know this terrible thing when you see people you haven't seen in a long time? What's the first thing that people say to each other? You look good. What does that mean? Oh, hi, you look good. You look good. Do you mean that if somebody says hi to you and you haven't seen them for a month and they don't say you look good, you look bad? When people get older, they tend to get more sensitive to how their perception, how their appearance is perceived. So sensitivity to appearance seems to be a very important thing. And it is for many people, you know. I mean, gee, in some of the cultures in the world, the word fat is equivalent to suicide. You know, it's a bad word. It's like there are things you just can't be. Old, right? Another bad word. These three-letter words, fat, old. You know, they're bad words. Oh, you can't be. Why not? But there are things that people are sensitive about, and you're going to be sensitive about certain things, and so you get hurt as soon as they're mentioned. So, for example, if you run into somebody, if your mate or somebody you're with looks at somebody who is attractive in a different kind of way, you could feel hurt by that. And I have heard husbands yelling at wives and saying, how could you hurt me like that? You looked at that man who was on the TV and you stared at him. Or women who will say the same thing about the men. You know, how could you look at that person like that for so long? It hurts me that you look at that. Then there are people who say, it hurts me that you read love stories about other men, about men. Or it hurts me that you look at pornography. It hurts me. Well, we kind of go to therapy, and now we say to the therapist, my wife is getting angry, my husband gets angry because I read love stories about romantic heroes. It hurts him that I'm admiring Albert Einstein. You know? It hurts her that he's looking at Playboy. What does this mean, it hurts them? You know, what does it mean, it hurts you? Did somebody whack you in the side of the head or something? What does it mean, hurts you? It means emotionally, right? We know that there's a pain that's the equivalent of a physical pain somewhere up in the head, but what triggers it? What makes it happen? If you feel loved by somebody, and you feel really loved by somebody and cared for by somebody, they could read all the romantic novels that they want, and you're not going to feel judgmental of them. You're not going to feel hurt by them. They could look at all the Playboys they want, and you're not going to feel hurt by it. Well, I don't know. There's a couple of ethical questions in there, but, you know, hey. Now, other things that happen to people, there are chemical sensitivities. You know, there's one called serotonin rejection sensitivity. When you have too much estrogen, too little serotonin, you become very sensitive to certain things, and you could go right down the pit. I've seen people's faces like change in a second. You know, they're walking around, they're very fragile. What about your sensitivity? So very often people who feel very sensitive are blaming somebody else for hurting them, but the first thing to do is to figure out how sensitive you are. Okay, let's take another call. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm sensitive about the meanness of the American people like yourself who are silent while the people of Gaza are being killed. I just can't believe it. I'm sure, Armand, you see yourself as a decent person. Had you been there in 1930 Germany, you would have been one of these people speaking out. You wouldn't have been afraid, blah, blah, blah. Here we are in the 21st century with the new anti-Semitism, which is directed at Arabs, and you're quiet. You're changing the subject. You have power. You're on the radio 3 days a week, 1 hour. You have a lot of power to be outraged at what's going on. And your silence, and that makes you complicit, and I'm sensitive about the meanness of our American government passing resolutions supporting children being burnt to the bone, and I'm sure if there's another 9/11, you'll say, oh, we're such good people, we're such decent, wonderful people. Those people who did this to us, they're brainwashed with their hatred. That will be your take on it. And that's what I'm sensitive about.
Thank you. Thank you very
Happy
much.
Happy birthday, Jerry.
Happy birthday, Jerry. You know, yeah. There are certain political positions we don't take on WBAI on purpose, but there is certainly enough voice in the direction that you're talking about, and certainly I could hear you're being hurt by it. It's an interesting thing being hurt by what happens in the world, because I certainly feel it. It goes right to my heart when people are cruel with people and people justify their cruel behaviors. It kills me. I mean, it goes there. But, you know, I keep my head above it in some way. And we all rebel in some way. But it really does go to the quick. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, Armand. I was wondering, I'm going through a very tough time in my life.
Sorry to
hear. I recently got married, and I just found out 6 months ago that my wife had an affair with another man.
Uh-huh.
And she has trickled in the information over a six-month period. First, it was just she kissed him. Then it was she made out with him and it was ongoing. And then she told me she had sex with him. Now she's only telling me it was once. I can't believe her. So, I don't know. Is it possible for me to be able to forgive sometime?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
You think?
Oh, sure. You know, this is one of those things, you know. It's one of those things when you think about it. Why did it come up? What makes her want to tell you this?
Well,
did you discover something? Were you investigating?
Yeah, I was suspicious the whole time. But prior to what she calls the infidelity, we were fighting over money and finances, and she said that it was my actions that basically caused her to stray.
Uh huh. People frequently do that. They frequently blame each other for that. But whatever it was that created this, here's where the question is. If you found out she took money of yours and gambled it away, you would feel, well, there's potential for forgiveness, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Is that right or
yeah.
not?
Yeah, I would.
See, so there's something in here that hurts you. And the depth of this hurt has to be seen. That's why couples therapists take a look at this from all sides, including how do you get over it? But there's something I learned about couples with infidelity. In fact, I've co-authored a book on infidelity, which is available on Amazon.
Okay. I'm going to look for that.
But one of the things about it is that once you get past it, you're a much stronger bonded couple than a couple who's never had it happen at all. There's something about the doors that it opens that leads to a better reality, if that's the direction it goes. So with good couples counseling, it is really, the fact that it's kind of stupid because men feel a certain way if anybody goes near my wife, you know, or women feel this way if somebody else has him, I got to get rid of him. With the exception of these little primitive, primal kind of responses we have, a betrayal is usually a sign that there's an opportunity to get closer.
I hope so.
You feel the pain, huh?
Yeah, I'm angry, and she just keeps telling me that I have no right to be angry.
Yeah, that's not it. I understand. I understand both points of view. Have you went to see a counselor yet?
We did, and we're in the process of trying to, we've been shopping around to see who we'd like. We're actually trying to pick between three therapists that we've seen.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's she, very, has,
You know, it's very hard to choose. It should be a specialty of theirs. There's quite a few people I know. If you give me a call, I might be able to tell you some people I know who deal with this really well.
Okay. Should I call your office?
Yeah, call my office.
All right. Thank you very much.
Right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Armand. You're the best.
Thanks. 212-209-2900. So betrayal, there's one of those hurts. How do you get over that one, huh? It's just another hurt. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there. Who's this?
This is Manny of Manhattan.
Hello, Manny.
You?
Good.
First thing I want to say, the last caller, that man is very brave and very strong. Mm. Kudos to you, my man. Kudos. All right. And you picked a topic I really like, revenge. Yeah. Like, if I can quote The Odd Couple,
sure.
Felix, revenge is wrong. Oscar, yeah, but it's real sweet.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Now, I called you once, and you told me once to forgive some guy that really ticked me off because he made an insult towards my girl, and I've been repeating, I forgive XX. I forgive XX. I don't believe it yet, but I figure if I say it enough times, tell a big enough lie, it'll be believed.
Well, how long, why does it hurt you so deeply for so long?
Because it was just a mounting of many things. And then this was the straw, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Okay? And I love to get revenge. How? What do you call the personality who has a very long fuse, but once you get to the end, he's coming at you with a vengeance? What do you call that?
Well, an angry person.
Oh. Guess what? I've been there.
Sure.
Yeah, even with the wife that was that screwed someone else. My marriage failed. Anyway,
yeah.
That's why I give kudos to that guy.
Yeah.
So, I guess that was the question I wanted to...
Yeah, well, the question for you is the following.
Ah,
you know?
Yes?
Question for you is about this fuse, about what happens to you when you get angry and what hurts you so much that it makes you get slowly angry to the point where you have this big fuse that's burning down. Why doesn't it get interrupted before it becomes a bomb?
Okay. I'm not sure I understood.
What happens to your feelings when you get angry? What happens?
Okay. Usually I take it. I can take it. I'm a tough mother jumper, okay?
Yeah, why take it? But why do you take it? Why don't you just deal with it?
Because I think life is more like a hockey game, not a basketball game. You can't be blowing the whistle on every little thing.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. And another thing, choose your battles. I totally believe that.
Okay, so let's say you're doing the hockey game and not the basketball game, and you're not blowing your whistle on every little thing. Let's say you're not blowing your whistle, but it sounds to me like if you don't blow your whistle, you're planning to shoot the guy later.
Shoot him?
You know, you're planning for revenge later. You're
yeah,
saying,
but,
oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm planning on right now. You'd be surprised. Right now on some SOB who said something in front of the president of my union, how I'm a lousy shop steward. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I stopped being shop steward. Guess what? Who's the new shop steward? But not by election, by appointment.
Yeah,
now, I'm looking to get after that SOB and just put the screws to him.
Yeah, you're
Why?
Angry with him. Uh-huh.
Why? The same way to government. Because I can.
Because you can and you will, and he knows.
Oh, yeah.
He knows what you did to him.
He knows what he did to me, and he knows what I'm going to... He doesn't know what I'm going to do to him.
Uh-huh, yeah. Is there a high road?
Is there a high road?
Mm. Yeah.
The only high road I say, get rid of this scrap instead of the new guy. The new guy works too hard. This guy, piece of crap.
But is there a high road?
Can you rephrase that?
Is there a high road? You know, the high road, the question, you know, you and I grew up in the same neighborhood. We know about revenge. We know about vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
But carrying it around is such a toxic element. You know, you carry this around, and then when you act it out, you start to act it out, and then they act back, and then they react, and then you react, and then people go on your side, and people go on his side. There's a high road. There's a place where you become bigger than all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be amazed when you become bigger than it, and it doesn't matter. And when you say, okay, you're there, you got this spot, and you don't plan revenge, you'd be amazed how freeing it could be.
Mm-hmm. But on the
other hand... So it's called the high road on purpose. It's called the high road because it means that you are spiritually deciding that you will not be a part of this kind of betrayal and violence.
Okay.
Which is good for the heart.
All right. Now, as you know, Eastern people believe in something called karma.
Mm-hmm.
What goes around will come around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we of the West, we also believe in that, but we give it a different name. We call it payback.
Okay.
Is that the high road?
No. Yeah, no, payback is not. Karma is not. Karma is what goes around will come around, and it will come around by its own force. A person will, with their own hand, see their own light. You see, it's not getting even. Of course you have a right to get even. Of course you could do whatever you want. I'm not judging you for it. I'm just inviting you to step up to a bigger game. And in the bigger game, you never carry any vengeance.
Mm.
It's a big game. So when we talk about the high road, in my life, I look to myself and I say, okay, where's the high road?
Mm.
You know, I won't let them hurt me, but where's the high road? Just a question. Just a question.
All right. To make full circle,
yep.
The guy that insulted me, I keep on saying myself, why are you carrying this grudge? Why
That's
don't
right.
you just let it go?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's hard.
Sure it is.
It's hard.
Well, because there's something in you that attaches to grudges towards men, especially men, who are representative of your father's injustices.
Oh, I don't know about that. My father
well,
and I get along very well.
Yeah, what about when you were a kid?
I don't know. Can you substitute my mother?
Okay, let's go with your mother. What
oh,
about
yeah,
her?
My mother's injustices. I'm taking it out on him? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, how about it? You tell me. What about when you were a kid and your mom was there doing all these injustices and she was unfair and, you know, you're just so angry at her? What about it? What about it? You know, and you get stuck in it.
Yeah.
You get stuck in that same kind of vengeance, and you get everybody becomes her in some way.
No. I got to beg to disagree. When it comes to my relationship, my mother, as they say, the opposite of hate, love is not hate. It's indifference.
That's the biggest meanness I know.
Indifference?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess
thanks for calling in.
Unwittingly.
Thanks for calling in.
Hey, love you, Armand.
Bye-bye. Thank
you. Then.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
That was a lot. I just listened to that. That was a lot of information.
Lots of stuff in there. Glad you could hear it all.
I heard it all. And
what's your name?
It's Gwen.
Hello, Gwen.
And I guess I started hearing you earlier when you were talking about contempt. And
yeah.
And now you're asking what hurts us. So, but I just want to go to contempt for a
sure.
second, okay? Because I don't think I have a lot of. I guess I do feel contempt some, with things, but not really things that are on my eye to eye level, but things that are happening through the government, which you know, and very very wealthy people at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard something that got me furious the other night. It was a blurb on the news that said that this fellow Bernie Madoff, who made off with all the money of the rich people, they are considering having the taxpayers, that's you and me, pay those rich people for their losses. And
mm-hmm.
it just made me nuts because it's
mm-hmm.
like, you know, my job in life right now is to make sure rich people do not lose their footing in any way, shape, or form. And I don't consider myself a very contemptible person, but when I start to hear of these projects falling apart and rich people losing their money, I kind of sit on the bus and I smile to myself and I feel happy about it because I really think that they're gluttons and they've stepped on so many people to get where they are. And it sort of doesn't bother me in the slightest bit when people say, doesn't it bother you that those people lost their money? I say no. I mean, it doesn't. It's great. It's like justice is finally prevailing. You know. So
I hear you, Gwen. I hear what you're saying, and I hear all those feelings. You know, I don't want anybody to get hurt, rich or poor. I don't want them to feel hurt. I mean, I know of a person who was living down in Florida, who is what they call one of the rich people who lost every cent, who has no home now, absolutely no home. So what do we say? Okay, now you lost your home, you can't pay for your house, you're literally on the street and you can't even get a nursing home.
Mm.
And we look at him and he's 86, 87 years old, and he's looking around and he's saying, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do. He goes from hospital room to hospital room trying to get food. We say, yeah, that's what you get for being rich.
Well, I understand, you know, and also Armand, I'm an activist, and I'm running for city council this year.
Oh, great, Gwen.
But
what's your last name? We have to
keep
that.
It's Goodwin. we fight the good battles and win.
Good, we'll remember
and
it.
And I'm in a very it's a hard situation because the truth is being an activist is just a great thing most of the time because people like what you do. They support
yep.
what you do. I have to be honest. I choose my battles because I love being in that position. I love
sure.
to take on the bad guy, and I love to be with the underdog. I am the underdog. But being in the city council, our city council is so awful and terrible and corrupt that it's almost like when you put your name in there, you're putting your name into a barrel of black snakes.
Absolutely.
And
it's kind of an amazing thing. You know, it's like it's very hard to even be, to not become part of it.
Right. And it's also very, very hard because you have to think on a level of how much are you willing to sacrifice? Because in some cases, you literally will sacrifice your life going into politics because that is how dangerous it is. And I really believe that. I mean, I'm not talking so much at the city council level. However, there have been people that have been shot.
Gwen, let me ask you, do you have a dog?
Do I have a dog?
Yeah.
I had a fantastically wonderful, amazing Susie Rock and Roll dog for years.
And what happened to Susie?
Both my dog and cat were adopted from the SPCA when they were putting dogs and cats down, and I told them I would bring them home and keep them until they died. I didn't put them down, and I stayed with them from the beginning to the end. And I love that dog so much that I had no idea that when she died, it would just kill me, and I couldn't go back and do it again.
What's the dog's name?
It was Susie.
Susie? Okay. Well, Gwen, how about wherever Susie is out there in the atmosphere listening to us, besides all the great political things you do, let's send a little kudos to Susie, too, huh?
Oh,
she touched your heart in a big way.
Oh, yes. I send them up every day.
Nice to talk to you. I have to be back with you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille. With you with the positive mind. We have to be going. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more talk about people and people's aggression. Be sure to tune in. If you want to get a copy of today's program or rehear it, you can go to thepositivemind.com. Thanks, Elaine.
The New Jersey Performing Arts Center's Family Time Series presents the 11th Annual Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration on Thursday, January 15, 2009 at 7 p.m. in Prudential Hall. This spirited musical celebration on what would have been the 80th birthday of the civil rights leader is featuring Grammy Award winner Richard Smallwood and his choir, Vision, with guest choir Jubilation, and guest speaker Mark H. Morial to celebrate one of the 20th century's most inspiring leaders. That's this Thursday, January 15, 2009 at 7 p.m. For more information, please call 1-888-466-5722 or visit the NJ PAC website at www.njpac.org.